Introducing WonderSuite from Bluehost.com, the tool that makes WordPress wonderful for everyone. Website creation is hard, but now with Bluehost, you can answer a few simple questions about your business and goals, and the WonderSuite tools will automatically lay out your WordPress website or store in minutes. Seriously. From there, you can customize your design, pick your brand colors, and add blocks. No custom theme or coding required. You'll get content suggestions that you can keep or revise. And with Yoast SEO built in, we automatically help you get found in search engines. From step-by-step guidance to suggested plugins to an AI-powered help bot, our built-in tools make WordPress wonderful for everyone. Whether you're a beginner or a pro, you can join over 2 million Bluehost users. Go to bluehost.com/wondersuite. That's bluehost.com/wondersuite.
Springtime savings are in full bloom, all in the Kroger app. Get 6 packs of delicious Coca-Cola, Pepsi, or 7-Up for $2.99 each. Then get flavorful large avocados for 99 cents each, all with your card and a digital coupon. Shop these deals at your local Kroger today, or tap the screen now to download the Kroger app to save big today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Prices and product availability subject to change. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Oh, hi there. It's Sunday, and welcome to The Atheist Experience. We've been on the air for 27 seasons, and to date, we have not heard any good arguments for the existence of God. Ghosts, or ghoulies, goblins, spirits, any of that kind of stuff. So maybe this week will be different. Maybe someone out there will hear this call and will call in and give us the evidence argument that we've been... Well, if so, get ready, because we're about to start. Hello, and welcome to The Atheist Experience. My name is Johnny Payne. Today is May 14th, 2023, and we are here with our friend, Dave Warnock. It's my privilege to have my first show with Dave Warnock today. Dave, how you doing?
Johnny P, we get to do a show together finally. Well, you've been avoiding me, I'm afraid.
I think a lot of people thought that we were the same person because we were never seen at the same time. But now it's proof positive that
we're here. We are.
Here we are. Well, just so everyone who doesn't know will now know, The Atheist Experience is a product of The Atheist of Austin, 501c3 nonprofit organization dedicated to the promotion of atheism, critical thinking, secular humanism, and the separation of religion and government. I think a lot of people did already, but
all good things.
Yeah, it bears worth repeating, I think. Let's get into our first call. Oh no, before we get into our first call, I'm just so excited. We're going to talk about our share your experience. Last week we asked, what do you think is the weirdest prayer God has heard? And of course, we don't believe that God exists. Some people out there think that when we ask these kind of questions that we don't believe that God exists. Okay. But here's our top three answers. QC said, please let my answer get the number one spot when they read out the best answers. Well, you don't get it. I'm sorry. You can beg, you can borrow, you can steal, but you can get number three. So that's it. Number two, Rational Pear says, God hear my pray. Please end crypto and crypto bros. Hmm. Well, nope, he's not delivering the goods on that one. And the number one answer from Craig Thompson, the weirdest prayer is in the Bible. Let me win war. I will sacrifice the first thing out my door.
And Dave, what was that? What was that?
You remember that one. That's the old story of Jephthah, right?
Yeah, his daughter. Oops. Oops, God, just kidding. Mm-hmm. No, he went ahead and did it because, you know, God would require that of him.
God is love. God is love. He's a stickler. He's a stickler for promises, though.
Keep the rules. Keep the rules.
Yeah, that's right. That's a pretty nasty one. But, you know, yeah. we have another question for this. Okay. And Dave's going to be the first one to answer. So I'm going to go ahead and ask you. Dave, blank is evidence of God's sense blank.
Yeah, that I thought about that, and I think I'm gonna say something that people are gonna go, what? And I'm gonna say rainbows. What? And the reason is because if you look at the Christians' understanding of God and rainbows, it's that God promised, he put a rainbow in the sky and signified by that that he was no longer going to get so pissed off at his creation that he would have to wipe them all out. So whenever Christians get all excited about a rainbow and, oh, it's God's promise, well, let's dig a little deeper into what that promise was. The promise was that he wasn't going to get so angry at the people he created that he was going to slaughter them all by a flood. And then secondarily, the rainbow being the symbol of gay pride and the Christians thinking it's theirs and thinking the gays have tried to steal it from them. I just think that's hilarious. So that's a good one, God. Well done.
Yeah. Well, I'm looking forward to hearing what, pardon me, other folks have to say. Our audience always comes up with wonderfully atrocious answers to all mm-hmm. of our questions. So please give it to us and we'll read the top three next week. Well, what say you to take a call? I was so excited before. I'm going to go ahead and pick Chuck. Chuck is a feller coming out of Hawaii. And Chuck says, miracles found in the Bible as well as science. I don't know what that means, but Chuck, you're going to explain it to us. You are on the Atheist Experience with Dave Warnock and Johnny P. Tell us about a miracle in the Bible.
Oh, well, the Christians say that there's lots of miracles in the Bible about talking snakes and talking donkeys and turning water into wine, walking on the water, all kinds of things.
Okay. Well, you're not going to hear any disagreement from us. We know that they say that. They say a lot of stuff, don't they? But what about it? Why should we care?
Well, they just say that it's a miracle. You know, it's no explanation for it. except that God caused it to happen.
Yeah,
and
okay.
I think that's the same thing in science.
How is a miracle the same thing as science? I'm a little confused there.
Well, in science, there's oxygen. They keeps everything alive. We wouldn't be alive if we didn't have oxygen. But
in
the oxygen
science, there's
out.
Oxygen?
What do you mean? You don't believe in the oxygen either?
You said in science there's oxygen. Is that, did you misspeak? Did you, because in real life there's oxygen, not just in science, which is a way of examining the world.
Perhaps he means that science has shown us that there's oxygen around us that we breathe. Science is what's revealed how the world works, as we didn't understand it back in the Bronze Age when they wrote the Bible.
Yeah.
Is that what you meant, Chuck?
Well, yeah, there's lots of things in science that are strange, that goes on and on and on. Oxygen doesn't wear out. Oxygen isn't used up. There's no place on the planet that generates new oxygen to replace that oxygen that's used up, because it isn't used up. It works over and over and over and over and over. It just keeps on working. Now, wouldn't you call that a miracle?
I don't think that's... Strictly speaking, I don't think that's true. I think that oxygen takes multiple forms with multiple, there's O2, O3, and I believe, and I'm not a scientist, I'm famously not a scientist, but I believe that the oxygen element forms and breaks down and reforms through processing. Of course, the chat will tell me I'm wrong if I am, but yeah, I think it does wear out. And I think
I'm more than that, I'm having trouble still correlating the miracles with science. Are you trying to say, Chuck, and help me understand what you're saying, clarify, are you trying to say that science shows us what really is happening when previous generations or years ago people would have thought that such and such was a miracle or the work of a god, like thunder and lightning, they attributed to the work of gods because they didn't understand what they were. But over years, scientists or people discovering things and understanding things helped us understand what was really happening around us. So we didn't need to relegate those things to gods and religions and superstitions. Is that kind of what you're saying, Chuck?
Well, science says there is no God. And so they're not going to say that it's a miracle from God.
No, Chuck.
No, science, I guess I'm still losing you there.
Yeah, Chuck, science doesn't say there is no God. I don't know what back of a cereal box you're getting your science says information from. Science doesn't have an opinion as to whether or not God exists, but there's no good evidence that God exists from a scientific point of view. That isn't the same as saying that God doesn't exist, Chuck. Come on. You know better than that, right?
No, you're just giving the atheist point of view. But science says there is no God.
Okay, where does everything it say came, that? Chuck, where does it say that? Where in the science book does the it
science
say
book.
That?
Yeah.
The science book. Or, yeah.
The science there's a yeah. science book. The science the book science. Doesn't say anything about God.
They no.
don't mention it at all.
It doesn't okay. say anything about God.
So it so doesn't that. Say there is no God, Chuck.
Yeah,
that's a you just thing. You just made your own point there.
Yeah, thank you.
I refuted your own point. You made anyway, Johnny's point.
We're going to take a victory lap on that one, Chuck. What else you got?
Well, that's what I was talking about, is miracles. The miracles in the Bible, you say, atheists say there is no miracles. They don't believe there's miracles.
Okay, let's cut to the chase, Chuck. Hey, Chuck, yeah. let's talk about you. Forget about what atheists say. Forget about what science says. What do you say? Do you believe when you read about miracles in the Bible, do you believe that they are true, that they really happened, that a donkey talked to Balaam, that a snake talked to Eve, that a man named Jesus walked on water and rose from the dead? Do you, let's forget about what science says or what atheists say or anyone else. Talk about Chuck in Hawaii. What do you say?
Mm-hmm. Well, I think that, I mean, I wasn't there, so I can't be an eyewitness, but I believe it's possible. If you can believe the first verse in the Bible, God created the heavens and the earth, then you certainly should be able to believe that he could make a donkey talk or a person walk on water. That's not, it's a
miracle. I'm asking you, I'm asking, and of course, none of us were there, whatever there was, or when that, whatever that was. But if we're talking about a mythical Garden of Eden, 6,000 plus years ago, are you saying you believe that a snake or a serpent, the Bible literally says, seduced Eve to eat a piece of fruit, who then seduced Adam to eat a piece of fruit, thereby condemning all of mankind to a life of original sin? Do you believe that story to be true?
Well, I believe that it's possible. I mean,
No. There are a lot of things that are possible. I'm asking you a point blank yes or no question. Do you believe that story actually happened as recorded in the book of Genesis, which you've already made reference to?
I don't know.
You guys, okay, cool. I don't either.
That attitude.
Hey, Chuck.
What'd you say?
Chuck.
You're saying, do you?
Chuck.
What'd
you don't
say?
Know. Yeah. Let me pause real if I can, Dave. Chuck.
You always say you don't know, and you always say I don't know is an answer.
But I can also tell you, Chuck, that I don't believe it. I don't know, but I don't believe it. You don't know, but do you believe it?
Well, that's kind of, you're trying to put me in a funny situation, because I can say that it's possible. Yeah. I could believe it if it happens.
Okay, but do you believe it, Chuck? Do you believe it? You don't know. I don't know a lot of stuff, but I believe certain things. And so I can say this. I don't know, just like you. I don't know that a 7-day creation took place, but I don't believe it. Do you say, I don't know, Johnny, but I believe it? Which is it? What is it?
I am not a religious person.
Okay.
I don't know what's going on, all these things that are going on. I'm not an authority on anything, but I can discuss it. Can't you discuss it?
Chuck, you are an authority on what you believe, all right? I'm an authority on what I believe. And I can tell you, I don't believe it.
Here's the best way. Here's the way I approach things. Not the best way. That just because I approach something some way doesn't mean it's the best way. Probably is, but it's not necessarily true. When I posed that question about a snake talking to them and people walking on water, the miracles of the Bible, you say they could happen. Well, if we take that approach, we could say anything could happen. But the way I live my life is I don't expect unreasonable things to happen, miraculous things to happen that I haven't seen happen or haven't been recorded to happen by reputable people over the course of human history.
Yeah.
So to say that something could happen, we could say that about anything. An alien could come sit on the top of my head as I'm doing this show today. That's never happened in the history of humankind, recorded humankind. So I wouldn't sit around thinking that could happen. I don't think things that are ridiculous are about to happen. Now, if I'm surprised and shocked by something ridiculous happening one day, then I'll change my attitude about it. But I tend to live my life around what things are most likely to happen, based upon the things we've seen, based upon sound logic, sound reason, and good evidence. That, in my opinion, is the best way to live life. Otherwise, we just sit around thinking, who could do anything could happen? Life's live. You never know. That doesn't make any sense to live life that way.
Well, you do. You believe the things that science says, even though they don't make any sense.
I don't believe them. I accept the evidence that science puts in front of me. I don't have to believe something that has sound evidence. There's no belief required.
Science presents you with miracles. They don't present you with evidence. And
there's no miracles in science. Chuck, what's a miracle? Define a miracle to me.
Yeah.
What's a miracle in your view?
I guess it's something that happens and there's no explanation for it. So, God did it.
Tell me what happens in science, as you put it, that you would classify as a miracle.
Well,
give me an example.
The Big Bang and evolution and subatomic particles.
Those are miracles?
An atom has electrons to fly around it with no explanation of why they're flying around it and how, what's powering them. You know, science gives you all this crap and you believe it because it's basically just another religion. And that's the religion you accept.
Dave, this is Chuck from Hawaii. This is Chuck from Hawaii's approach to the world. Chuck is a gentleman who's called before who believes that science is a bunch of hooey in some format, and yet is calling us on a telephone.
Yeah,
and
it's science.
Mm-hmm. And we have a YouTube program with utilizes an understanding that humans have of electromagnetism and, you know, whatever else goes into it, the internet and video recording technology and the power network and everything else. And even though a scientific understanding of these phenomena, the ability to manipulate the electromagnetic spectrum in such a way to make these kind of things happen, that's just make believe.
That's a hooey.
That's you,
hooey, Johnny. Bunch of hooey.
It's hooey. Chuck, I think, Chuck, that you maybe should go study a little bit more of the science that you believe is not real. I'm going to let you go. I would encourage you to go to the library and pick up a high school book on basic science. And then bring to us some more specific, how about this? Let's talk about electromagnetism. When you call back, I want you to say that you read a chapter of a book about electromagnetism, and you want to talk about how that's make-believe based upon your studies. Maybe Forrest will be on, maybe Ben, maybe any of the other hosts who can really grill you on your understanding. And
I'm not a scientist. I do know that I have ALS, Chuck. It's a motor neuron disease. It's fatal. It will kill me. I've had it for several years, but they don't understand what causes it. Medical science does not understand it. So therefore, I am a walking miracle. How about that? We should end on that, Chuck.
There you go. Well, thank you, Chuck, for calling. You've witnessed a miracle. It's Dave.
You're looking at one right here.
He's right there.
I'm a miracle.
If you'd like what we do, Chuck and everyone else, blessed be. There's some ways you can support the atheist community of Austin and the atheist experience. You can become a member for as little as 99 cents a month. Click the join button below the video, and this will give you access to special chat emoji. And you can send a super chat with a question or a comment, which will be read live on air during the show. Speaking of which, we got one right here. Greg Markowski has sent us $20.
Greggy.
Thank you, sir. Having to work today, thanks for making it go a little faster. Well,
glad we could help.
Yeah, be careful. Don't work too fast.
Introducing Wondersuite from Bluehost.com, the tool that makes WordPress wonderful for everyone. Website creation is hard, but now with Bluehost, you can answer a few simple questions about your business and goals, and the Wondersuite tools will automatically lay out your WordPress website or store in minutes. Seriously. From there, you can customize your design, pick your brand colors, and add blocks. No custom theme or coding required. You'll get content suggestions that you can keep or revise. And with Yoast SEO built in, we automatically help you get found in search engines. From step-by-step guidance to suggested plugins to an AI-powered help bot, our built-in tools make WordPress wonderful for everyone. Whether you're a beginner or a pro, you can join over 2 million Bluehost users. Go to bluehost.com/wondersuite. That's bluehost.com/wondersuite.
Fast and always been with the news.
Love, Greg. Great guy.
Thank you so much. All right, we're going to take our second call. Our second call is going to be Javier. Javier is a chap coming out of Florida, and Javier asks, is it possible to falsify God? You're on Atheist Experience with Dave Warnock and Johnny P. Is it possible to falsify God? What do you think? You tell us, and then we'll tell you what we think.
Hey, gentlemen. I was
hey, Javier.
Story of the Tower of Babel. Oh, Xavier. I said Xavier.
Hmm. Oh, Xavier. Xavier. Sorry.
It's called the cross-screening.
Okay. Gotcha.
No, it's like cross-screener wrote it. No, it's okay. Thank you, guys. I was reading the Tower of Babel story, and it seems to, it says that God is above the sky. So I'm still a theist, but but if God's not above the sky, though, like, because we know what's above the sky. So does this falsify God, or God just can God exist outside of space and time?
The argument is that God does exist outside of space and time. And I suppose God is above the sky is a metaphor for beyond, I don't know, space time. I suppose you could look at it that way. And ancient people shepherding their goats and sheep wouldn't have understood. And so God sent his word down to them in a way that they could understand. I suppose that's the apologetic.
I think that rather than falsifying God, it more or less falsifies the understanding of God that the writers of the scriptures had. Yep. Because if the people who wrote, whoever wrote the story of the Tower of Babel, would have thought at that point in time that the things above the clouds, which is as far as they could see and know and understand, because they had no understanding of what was beyond that, and they understood that God lived above them in that way, that somehow the people of earth could build a tower tall enough to reach to God. And I mean, that's laughable to us now. And also even the writers of the New Testament, if you remember, when Jesus rose from the dead, ostensibly, and hung around with his disciples for a few days, and then rose up into heaven, up into the clouds, again, that was their understanding of where heaven was and where God was. It just clearly shows that they had no clue about these things. And it's clear that the God that's supposed to be omniscient and omnipresent and omnipowerful, this God that's supposed to know all these things and telling the writers of the scriptures these things clearly didn't communicate well enough to let them know that about the atmosphere, that the earth was round. That's why people today who cling to a literal interpretation of scripture think the earth is flat. They hold more weight on what the scripture says than what science, sorry, Chuck from Hawaii, has shown us about the way the world works. And so the writers of the scriptures in Genesis for the Tower of Babel, in the Gospels for Jesus rising up into the clouds, they had no clue about how the world really worked.
Right.
And if the God of the universe was communicating to them, as supposedly he was, in a way that they could write the scriptures that was supposed to carry all the great and important things of how we should live, they had no clue. And the God that was supposed to know all these things wasn't telling them for some reason. So it doesn't falsify God. It falsifies any relationship that the God of the universe would have with his creation, in my view.
Yeah. I don't fault the ancient people for thinking that there was more up above the clouds. We had to start somewhere.
Yeah.
Right.
What else could they think?
They had only their own very anthropocentric view of the world. And it had to be that way because the continued existence of themselves and their family and their clan group, whatever, was the most important thing. And it continued their survival. And so they built upon that. We've gotten there because people started there. Someone posited that there was more, first of all, that there was more past the clouds. And then it got more sophisticated. The stars are not holes in a cloak. And then we realized that at some point it's other suns just like ours. And then someone asked, what if there are other suns like ours, then maybe there's other planets, maybe there's other beings. And all these attempts to understand the world, it's admirable. But here's the thing. It's a childlike, like species-wise, it's a childlike understanding of the universe that we live. And to quote 1 Corinthians 13, verse 11, when I was a child, I talked like a child, I thought like a child, I reasoned like a child. But when I became a man, I put the ways of childhood behind me. Our problem is that as a species, some of us won't put the ways of childhood behind it. This way of magical thinking, this anthropocentric, this human-centric, I'm the most important thing in the world, gimme, 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 me, 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 my, now, to quote Captain Hook from Hook. that's a childish way of looking at the world. And,
yeah.
And we who don't believe that stuff, we've got a more nuanced, more, I don't know, smallified, what's the word I'm thinking of? Realistic humanistic, dehumanistic view of the universe is just we're one tiny mite.
Oh, yeah. We see our place in it, and our place is not the center of it or the apple of God's eye. That's why I love you mentioning that verse. It's why I called my memoir Childish Things, because in my view, my deconstruction of my faith was me essentially putting away childish things. So you should get you a copy of that, Johnny, by the way.
Well, you know,
Xavier, what do you think about what we're saying about what you're posing your question? Can we falsify God? What are your thoughts on that?
Yeah, ancient peoples were wrong about science and probably history, but I don't see how that falsifies God. I also want to add that Jesus, in the sermon, in his Olivet Discourse, he said, "I will gather my elect from the four winds of the earth." So it seemed like Jesus believed in a flat earth, but I just don't see how this falsifies, like, that there's a divine deity that will send us to hell when we die.
Well, Xavier, I don't think you're going to get there falsifying God as a concept, but we can say this, that we know that the earth isn't flat, and so the four winds of the earth, or whatever that might be, you could falsify that understanding. But I think that what you end up getting is a God of the gaps, is the concept of God that is put forth by the biblical writers, philosophically, scientifically, socially, moralistically, or morally, keeps on retreating when we know more about the world we live in, how humans interact, and is always on his heels. And so be more specific about it. We're not going to be able to falsify the concept necessarily of some sort of quote unquote higher being, because Jesus, the character of Jesus in an ancient book says that he'll, you know, there's four winds and maybe the earth is flat, whatever it might be. But we can at least get rid of that understanding of the world by that God. So if Jesus was a divine being who had access to eternal truths, objective reality, well, we know he didn't, because he talks about the earth being flat, unless you're going to give him a pass and saying he was explaining it to people who believed in a flat earth, except he was talking to people in Judea during the Roman Empire, and the earth was already proven to be round by, was it Anaxagoras at that point? And who knows if that was commonly accepted? I don't know. But think of it that way, if you wish. Xavier, thoughts?
I guess they just keep putting God above the universe when science disproves specific claims. So it keeps becoming unreachable to scientifically verify that there is a God.
It becomes
impossible.
You're listed as a theist, Xavier, on our call-in studio, okay? On our program has called.
I am.
So why do you believe? Why do you believe that a God exists?
Because I'm scared of hell.
Oh, okay. All right. Are you afraid of did you see Big Trouble in Little China?
No.
It's a good one. The hero of the story keeps talking about various Chinese hells. The hell where this happens, the hell where that happens. It's pretty funny. But are you afraid of the multitude of Chinese hells?
No, but maybe they're talking about the same hell.
Okay. Well, how do you go to hell, and how do you not go to hell?
By disagreeing with the wrong churches.
I see. And how would you determine
with certain religions?
Okay. So how would you determine which one is the right religion? Looking at it objectively, not from the perspective of being raised. Were you raised Christian or something else?
Christian. No, I'm a Roman Catholic.
Okay. You were a Roman Catholic? Been one since the day you were born?
Yeah. Well, the day I got baptized as a newborn, as a toddler, as a baby.
All right. Back up from your Catholicism, because I was raised Catholic as well. All right. Altar boy, communion, confession, confirmation, the whole deal, right? Although I didn't really believe by the time I was confirmed, they did it for my mother, which was, hey, Mother's Day. It was a mistake, but harmless. Okay, back up away from your upbringing, if you would. Create a little alternate universe, all right? If it makes you afraid to do that, because we've had callers that are afraid to even question, because God's going to burn them for all of time. But pretend that we're in a thought experiment, okay? You are a human being. You have heard of the concept of hell. You don't want to go there, because we pursue pleasure and we avoid pain, okay? How would you, objectively speaking, select which religion to follow? How would you do it?
Which one has the most valid claim to authority?
All right.
I think that would be the most likely true.
Okay.
Not with certainty, but...
Yeah, no. Beyond a reasonable doubt.
You think that's Catholicism, based upon the history of Catholicism? You think the Catholic Church fits that criterion?
Yeah, it's not just numbers. It's a certain validity, like a certain cohesion. Like they've managed to keep the most number of followers due to its own authority.
You know how they've kept that, Johnny? I mean, Xavier,
I want to know.
They've kept that by keeping people afraid of hell, like
well,
you.
Xavier, is your argument that the reason why Catholicism is the most valid is because it's been around for about 2,000 years, give or take, right? In one form or another, but the form of the religion is pretty much the same as when it started, and it has a billion followers. Is that your argument?
Numbers and a certain cohesion that standardizes its claim to authority.
Okay. Cohesion. What do you mean by cohesion?
Like, they have the least amount of split-offs. They maintain its essential core doctrines in a succession, like an apostolic succession.
Okay, hang on a second. The least amount of split-offs. In the beginning, we had the Catholic Church, or we had the Church, right? And Peter and all those guys, right? But then we had split-offs. We had the Arians. We had the Manichaeists. We had, Dave, you could probably name off a few more. Pelagianists, I think that was. Those are some split-offs, too, from the original Church. And then we go farther along. We've got Martin Luther split off. We've got the Presbyterians and Pentecostals and
6,000 denominations Christianity.
Sounds like there's a lot of split offs.
Mm-hmm.
Xavier, aren't there a lot of groups that have split off from the Catholic Church, right?
Yeah, but how do you know? It remains the largest. So what?
It's the largest. What's the largest beer in the world? Let's say it's Budweiser, okay? Let's just say it's Budweiser. Does that mean Budweiser is the best beer, objectively speaking? I don't think anyone's really going to say that.
Xavier, you say you're a Christian or a theist, a Catholic, because you are afraid of hell. Would you say you love God?
I'm supposed to. It's a complicated relationship.
The first commandment is to love the Lord God with all your heart, soul, mind, and strength. Do you say that you do that? Is that something you can adhere to?
Yeah, I've been loving him my whole life.
I'm not saying how good of a person, you know, how well you keep his commandments, that kind of stuff. You know, all Christians that I know of say, oh, well, we all sin, you know, nobody's perfect. I'm not talking about that. I'm talking about a relationship here. I don't know if you're a father or not, but imagine a son or a daughter of a father or a mother only loving that father because they're afraid if they didn't, that father would cast them into some burning basement somewhere for eternity because they didn't please them the way that they should have. That is an illustration of the kind of relationship you're describing to me between you and the God that you claim to love imperfectly. Would that be fair?
Yeah, that sounds about right.
Do you think that's a healthy relationship? Is that the kind of relationship you would want with one of your children or any child on the earth that you would want for them and a parent? And if that's the only thing keeping you in that relationship, I would say you need to really take a hard look at that and ask yourself, is that the best way to live the one life that we know we have? Because it doesn't sound like you're getting much out of it. And it doesn't sound like God's getting much out of it if the only part of it that he's involved in is watching you to make sure you don't mess up enough that he throws you into hell. That's a terribly toxic and abusive relationship. And I hope you can see that. And I hate that you live your life and maintain a relationship with this God figure based solely on the fear that he would throw you into hell if you didn't. If you'll take a step back, as Johnny was suggesting, I think you'll see the concept of a hell in some other netherworld, of some place of eternal torment, of whatever kind you want to call it, is incredibly remote, the idea that that even exists. So I would wish that you could get free from that fear and that concept and live a life of freedom and liberty and autonomy and be the best version of yourself you can be, because that's possible for you. That's out there. And I would encourage you to reach for it.
Yeah. Yeah. Xavier, I want the same thing that Dave wants for you, too. It's probably going to be a difficult path, but we encourage you to really evaluate whether you are convinced by the claims of Catholicism because they're legit. And I'm sorry, sheer numbers and the fact that they've been around for a long time ain't going to cut it. There's a lot of bad ideas have been around for a longer than that.
Mm-hmm.
And you reject those. But that you're afraid. Fear is the mind killer. particular. If you can step away from the fear of burning forever and really evaluate the claims of Catholicism, you may find that they're not very good. And that's how you're afraid to really critically analyze and reject the claims of it, or at least say there's not enough evidence for it. Yeah. I personally don't want to live in a universe where whatever mistakes I may make over the next 50 years, if I'm lucky, will determine how I spend all of eternity, that I burn, skin melting off of my bones, the torturous thirst, flames licking, you know, the insides of my whatever. That just sounds terrible. Or I live in paradise with a deity that requires perfect obedience forever. Can never think that there might be something better, that I must be a prisoner of the divine warden, and if I don't, I'll get sent down to hell. That's just awful.
There's a life beyond all of that. There's a life of freedom, yeah. Xavier. Yeah. There's an organization called Recovering From Religion. You can find it online, recoveringfromreligion.org. There's agents, chat people you can talk to. I would encourage you to reach out to them and talk to them about, I mean, you may not be ready today, but one day maybe you are ready to examine and think through some of these ideas that you've held your whole life that, you know, in my view, and apparently it's keeping you in bondage and to a really masochistic God figure. And I really am sad about that for you. And reach out to Recovering From Religion. Talk to the people there. You can have, there's a lot better way to live, bro. Really, really and truly. I don't want that for you. Yes, life's too short.
Indeed. Dave, well said.
I don't think you guys, I think you guys are good people. I don't think you deserve hell either. I don't think any of us do.
That's why it's not real.
Proves that there is one.
It's fake, dude. Yeah. It's not what? Real. I know that
there is one.
Yeah, I'm making a claim.
It's not there. Nobody deserves it.
Yeah.
Nobody's going there. It's a made up thing to keep people in line. That's it.
Don't worry. You're not alone. People have been spooked by hell for 2000 years, longer than that. So you're in a long tradition of people being sold this.
You're not
threat.
The only one that's been duped. It's a long running prank that keeps people like you in line, and it's worked for you. And I'm just telling you, bro, you can get free from it and let that thing fade in the background.
Yes. Xavier, I'm going to let you go.
Take care, bro.
Call back. Share your thoughts in the future. We want to hear from you. Good luck to you in your journey, okay? Well, I'll tell you what, Dave. I've never really had a fear of hell. I've personally had a fear of heaven.
Yeah, I believe. Heaven sounds awful.
Heaven sounds just terrible.
Hosanna, Hosanna, Hosanna for 50 million years.
I get songs stuck in my head. Regular songs. Can you imagine singing for an eternity?
No,
forget it. Hey, we have a channel that houses all of the shows of the ACA in audio podcast form. Visit tiny.cc/AENpodcast. There you can listen to all the latest shows from the Atheist Experience, Talk Heathen, Truth Wanted, the Nonprofits, and all the other shows we've ever done on one channel. Support us as well on Patreon at tiny.cc/PatreonAXP. We've got another super chat, and I'm going to read this one, if that's all right with you, Dave.
Go for it.
King Nick, 1994, all hail, King Nick, sends us 10 euros. Thank you so much for that. That's pretty cool. No one's ever given me a euro before. I don't get to keep it.
It's not real money. You know that, right?
Well, devil money, no, I'm sure.
King Nick, we know it is. We think.
Spends pretty well.
It spends better.
King Nick says, Dave's memoir is fantastic. I've read it twice already. Can't wait for your second book, A Smiley Face.
Nice.
Nice to hear. Thank you. And Johnny and Dave, if you know it, who's your favorite Cimmerillion character? My favorite Cimmerillion character is Annatar, Lord of Gift, a.k.a. spoilers. Plug your ears. It's Sauron. It's Sauron. He went into hiding after the fall of Morgoth, came back, and he came back as Annatar, Lord of Gifts, and he schmoozed his way into, I think it was the Noldor. He taught them how to make ring. And then, oops. It turns out it was Sauron the entire bed. Dave, do you have a favorite Cimmerillion character?
I have no idea what you're talking about. Are these fantasy football characters? Because that's kind of what I'm into.
It's my version of fantasy football.
I have no idea what you're talking about. I think you're just giving everyone a hint that you like gifts. So people send Johnny P. Angel some gifts.
Don't you dare. Don't you dare send me any gifts. But
yeah, that's what he wants.
Who's on my Cimmerillion fantasy football team? Well, we got Annatar, Lord of Gifts. Obviously, we got Tulkas.
Oh, best wide receiver. Yeah, best wide receiver.
You got
yards after catch. Awesome.
There you go. Tom Bombadil is going to be in there too. Bjorn and Hvar, I believe. But enough of that. Enough of that. We're gonna take our third, and I'm gonna take Tasha. Tasha is a gal coming out of the Lone Star State of Texas, and she's asking: is the belief in aliens becoming a religion? Tasha, what do you think? Do you think it's becoming a religion?
Hi, Tasha.
Well, from what I've seen, I have a friend who has become disconcerted with Catholicism, and she's going on her spiritual journey to find something that fits for her. And it seems to me that what she's landed on is that she has a creation myth. The aliens seeded humanity on the earth. She has them watching over us. They visit in spaceships and watch over us, and they interfere with us by kidnapping people and doing things.
What are they doing?
Nefarious things.
I'm not sure what the aliens do when they kidnap people. It's just her assertion.
I want to find out.
They get our best recipes.
I would like that experience. I'm all about the experiences. So I want to be kidnapped by an alien, taken upon their spaceship, and have things done, whatever that is.
Right.
It's not the royal treatment. But, I don't think I want to have things done to me. But, yeah.
Oh, it's consensual, obviously.
Oh, okay.
So, Tasha, right. I mean,
she has.
Yeah. What do you think? Does that sound crazy to you?
It seems kind of crazy to me. I don't know if this is media driven, and I know that she has basically replaced one belief system with a belief in aliens. But I thought this might just be just her. But then in my travels through the world, I've talked to other people who are like, yeah, the aliens designed us and put us here. So it's not just her, but she's not talking with these other people. They're not organized. They're not going to a building once a week to visit each other.
Yeah.
So what qualifies as a religion? And is this, like, are we watching the beginnings of a new religion?
I doubt it. I mean, somebody could, or to my view, religion has to be organized and there's money involved. Somebody has to be making money for it to be a legitimate religion, because that seems to be the primary motivator there, and control. In my view, if there are enough of these people floating around who have these alien beliefs, if you will, it seems ripe. I'm thinking to myself, this might be an opportunity for me I haven't really seized upon, because I'm charismatic. I can be a leader. I think I could form a religion around this. But no, I would have to suspend too much rational thinking, and I'm not very good at that anymore. But I think somebody could organize it and make it a religion. The internet is a tool that allows people to do that. But as to my knowledge yet, I haven't seen evidence of anyone doing that. So I think it probably is just people who have similar ideas that find each other here and there and share these ideas that seem to be in common in some ways. I don't know. What do you think, Johnny?
Yeah, I think you'd have to, I guess we won't find, because it'd probably take like 100 years or so. But I think that in order for it to form into a religion, you've got to have a bit of dogma, a bit of orthodoxy, right? There need to have community.
Mm-hmm.
I would imagine forming around this core belief, a stratification, perhaps. Maybe I'm looking at it too much in the form of like a Western religion, but even Buddhism has a kind of priestly class, followers, various segmented society according to the belief system, a universal viewpoint. I don't think we have that yet. I guess it could form, but I don't think there is an orthodox view of aliens of seeded planet. Somebody in the comment made some reference to the movie Prometheus. It is kind of like that. But we know that it used to be that sort of hocus pocus people believed in angels and pixies and fairies for a long, long time. They still do. But it was more dominant, and now it's extraterrestrials and harmony of the spheres and various things like that. I think this is just the latest iteration of loosey-goosey spiritualism with a pseudoscientific flavor to it. You know, we know that there are other stars and that there are other planets, or we have lots of evidence for it.
Yeah, and aliens are possible. You know, we don't assume that we're the only inhabited planet is a bit arrogant, in my view. But Tasha, why do you think your friend has latched onto this? What do you think's behind that?
Well, I am wondering if because she was raised in the Catholic Church, like, I keep wondering why people even care how the Earth got here, how we got here. I mean, everything was here as far as I can remember, and I expect it all to be here tomorrow.
Thank you. I've been saying that forever. Thank you.
And I have I've never needed, like, it's Big Bang and all that, very interesting, but whatever. I'm it's not my particular interest.
Yeah.
And but I think perhaps because she was posed these questions as a child and she expects this need to fulfill an answer.
Yeah.
So
she
doesn't believe the Catholic answer anymore. She must find an answer somewhere else.
Yeah. 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 There's a discomfort a lot of people have, which is simply saying, I don't know. It seems to be the three hardest words for many people to say. And when people, someone asks me, well, how do we get here then if it's not God? I'm okay with saying, you know what? I don't know. As smarter people than me have some pretty good ideas. But to your point, Tasha, and this is what I've said on many shows like this, I don't really give a shit. We're here now. We got here somehow. What I don't see is any God anywhere doing anything for anyone, period. That's what we need to be talking about. What's this God doing who supposedly put us here? So I don't know. Your friend is a lot like many people I've run into. They have a need to believe in something because it's uncomfortable to say, I don't know.
Yeah.
And they want to be a part of something bigger than themselves. When I deconstructed from my Christian faith, I came to a place pretty quickly of saying, you know what? I don't believe any religion of any God, any kind of thing. I don't feel the need to have faith in anything. I'm okay living in a world of logic and reason and evidence. And what I don't have evidence for and what doesn't make sense to me, I'm okay with setting it to the side until it does make sense and I do have evidence. And that to me has been a much more reasonable way to live. But some people just really have a problem not believing in something. And I don't really know what's behind that other than the insecurity of living in a world that's just chaotic and random and unpredictable. And that can be a very fearful place to live. And so we want to make up stories that make that make more sense than it really does. And I suspect that's what's behind a lot of people's need to believe in something.
Yeah, I would add to that.
Is it an insidious trick to propose these questions to people that aren't even asking them?
What questions do you mean?
Yeah.
What do you mean?
Is it a manipulation to ask a child, like, where did the world come from, and then give them the answer? Like, it seems to me that a lot of actually every religion I know of has a creation story.
Right.
So is that just once you figure out that trick of asking that question, now you have a manipulative hold on people and they would never have asked that question themselves?
I don't think that there's a few things I'd like to pull apart there. One, I don't have any kids that I know of. And I think we ask children questions to make them think about the world, right? We ask them, how did that happen? Or why do you think that is? And that's a good way of getting them to think. Let their imaginations stretch and maybe not giving them the answers. That's, I think, the insidious part of it, right? But asking the question, there's nothing wrong with it. I have nieces and nephews, right? And I've been around kids my whole life in one form or another. And I like to joke with kids, right? I'll tell them, you know, obvious lies. Like, when I was your age, I had to walk up, you know, I had to walk to school in the blizzard both ways.
That was true in my case. That was true in my case.
And then they'll say, you're lying. You're a liar, faker. Things like that. Like, oh, I'm not lying. And then you're preparing them for critical thinking, I guess. It's also fun to throw things at you. Kids can be fun there, right? But asking those questions are great. I think giving them an answer and then not encouraging the questions is what's insidious.
Mm-hmm.
And we hear this a lot. Freedom From Religion Foundation, the founder, asked something where it was, if Jesus isn't real, then whose slave am I, right? Or some quote like that. That's the kind of thinking that I think is broken. But by asking the question, how did the world get here? Who created the world? You are opening yourself up to the idea that no one, like, well, why has it got to be a who? You've got to teach that critical thinking. So I don't think there's anything wrong with asking the question. I think it's like putting a stop to the questioning is where the problem is. It should never stop. The questioning should always continue.
Yeah, questioning that is, or when parents are questioning children with a predetermined answer, which is indoctrination. Most people who grow up in a particular faith are indoctrinated at a young age, and that's parents force feeding the answers to the universe to their children because they believe it's important for their children to believe the right things. I did that as a parent, as a Christian parent. I taught my children what to believe, not what to think, not how to think. That was wrong. I've recognized that now. And so, to Johnny's point, that to ask questions of kids or to stimulate their questioning and their curiosity is a good thing. It causes them to think about big questions and to look for answers. But to force feed answers to them that would correlate with a worldview that we want them to have because we know, quote unquote, that it's right, that's indoctrination and that is insidious. We don't think it's insidious at the time. We're not trying to be Dr. Evil here. We're just doing what we've been taught to do and train up a child in the way it should go, kind of thing, what the Bible instructed us to do. So Christians who indoctrinate their children think that they're doing a good thing for them because they want them to be on the right side of the God question in their view. But actually just feeding questions, you know, how do you think we got here? What's the world all about? That's a good thing. Stimulate creativity, curiosity and questioning, you know, question everything is a good mantra to give kids. But yeah, what do you think about that, Tasha?
I think math, science, and debate class would be a pretty good solution.
Yeah.
But those things are teaching logic, and with science, you have to design experiments and try to analyze things, which is a second question, if I may. I've heard a lot of people say that atheism is a religion, but by your own definition, it's not collecting money. And it's not meeting together every week in a building.
It can be.
So it wouldn't qualify.
More importantly to that, it's not a belief system.
Yeah.
To Johnny's point earlier, it doesn't have a theology around it. It doesn't have any dogma. There's no one central set of tenets.
I would disagree.
How so?
I would disagree. It's a belief that logic and evidence can give you truth. That is a belief.
No, logic and evidence don't give us truth. Evidence reveals what's true, and logic points us in the direction of what's true. But a belief system is something where I am stating a belief that I have to back up with evidence or some kind of support. I don't, as an atheist, tell me what my belief system would be as an atheist.
Yeah.
An atheist simply says, I don't believe in a God. I don't see enough evidence to believe in a God. That's my definition of an atheist, period. Yeah. That's it. That's the end of it.
But you're already asserting that you would accept evidence. So the fact that you can rely on...
That's not belief.
Logic,
that's not...
analysis, and evidence,
okay,
that you trust logic, you believe that logic is trustworthy.
Sure. Tasha, is a courtroom a religion as well?
Well, that's the question of the day for me, is what ends up qualifying as a religion? Are aliens a religion? Well, they're not meeting in a building and they're not collecting money and they're not organized.
Yeah.
So it seems like the qualifications to be a religion, I was thinking it was like an origin myth and a being watching over you.
I'm not an authority on what
constitutes a religion. I don't think possibly anyone is. Anything can be, you can be religious about anything. That phrase, he was religious about his workout routine. He worked out religiously.
It's a metaphor.
You know, it's just an ideology that means that you are adhering to something that's very important to you.
Dedicated to a course of action. That's a metaphor, though. It's not like I work out pretty regularly. I'm not religious about it. I don't have rites and ceremonies. I guess I pay for gym like equipment and stuff like that. But I try to eat healthy.
Do you go to a building with other people who also practice this belief?
I don't, because I don't like people to see me sweat.
Johnny's so, in no, workout religion.
I work out at home. But I think the difference is, again, that there's all those other qualities. Because if you're talking about reliance upon logic and reasoning and evidence and things like that, I mentioned a courtroom, court, the legal system around the world, whatever it might be, that's not a religion. So it's got to be more than that. It's got to be more than devotion to a certain idea, because then every fandom is a religion. It's got to be more than just these small elements. It's all these things put together. And I do believe that that what we had talked about earlier, about there being certain rites and ceremonies, the hierarchy and orthodoxy, dogma, stratification of society, a worldview, certain views, all those things together. And I will tell you, atheism, the atheists that I know, they're all very different. Ask 15 atheists what they think about a particular issue. You'll get 16 answers. At each other's,
somebody like me will have two answers. So What are you religious about, Tasha? What in terms of what we've been talking about, what would your thing be?
Well, my spiritual journey is kind of really odd and unique, because I was raised in a household that believed you should never discuss religion or beliefs, that people must come to them on their own.
Mm-hmm.
So I have my own little personal belief system that I came to by myself, and I'm still not ready to talk to other people about it.
You don't have to. That's your business.
Yeah, no, you don't. Not at all. And you're fine. That's why you called in to talk about your friend's belief system instead of yours.
Well, I'm still working on my own, but
we all are. Honestly,
religion.
Yeah, we all are working on it. I think that's a good point. I left evangelical Christianity about a dozen years ago. And since then, I've identified as an atheist, an agnostic, a humanist, a free thinker, all those things, because atheist simply to me, as I stated before, simply means I do not see enough evidence to believe in a God. Therefore, I am atheist. I'm not theist. What my worldview is would be more of a humanist. I believe in humanity, the goodness of humans, that we all make our own fate. We make our own meaning. And therein lies the goodness of humanity. That doesn't mean we're all good all the time. Some of us can do bad things and hurt people, but we have the capacity to repair that and make amends for that and so on. But I'm always open to learning new things and gaining new information and changing. I believe if we quit changing, we quit growing, and we quit becoming the better version of ourselves. I want to be the best version of myself when I die that I've ever been. I don't want to get stuck in a rut, stuck in a way of thinking that I can't be moved from. If you give me good evidence or good logic for something, I'm open to changing my mind. And I think that's a good, solid position from which to live.
Agreed.
It works for me.
Agreed. All right, Tasha, we really appreciate your call. When you're ready to talk about your own personal belief system.
Bring it, girl.
Come here or go to Talk Heathen. They're a little nicer there. Although I think we're pretty nice today. I think
we're damn nice.
Yeah. We're nicest. All right.
Thanks for your call, Tasha.
Yeah, thank you so much. We've got merchandise. You want to complain that we have too many ads? Tough nuts, because we got merchandise. This month is special. We're bringing back the top three designs as rated by the fans for the month of May only. If you missed out on getting one of these before, here's your chance to get them. But hurry. They're only around till the end of the month. Use the discount code FAVORITES for a 10% discount. Visit tiny.cc/merch8ca to get them now. And we want to send a big thank you to the crew who make this happen.
Yay,
crew. We were joking earlier today that we talking heads are the ones that really make the show happen.
There's no show with us, these guys.
Yeah, I had to beg for a background from immediately after making that joke. I had to crawl back to
them. That was embarrassing. That was embarrassing. I was embarrassed for you, Johnny. I really was. I had to look away.
Someone's got to have shame for me, and might as well not be me. All right, we got Gregory. Gregory's Gregory the Great coming out of Louisiana. And Gregory, you want to know, how do you view loving God? I want to know how you view loving God first, and then we will share our views of that.
Well, my question is, it's more so an argument that I've been studying and hearing from the atheist point of view. And typically it is, Typically, it is, if God is loving, how could he cause someone to burn forever?
Yeah, that's come up
and
a
I'm
bit.
Trying
yeah.
to, I'm trying to see if, and it's probably not like a exclusive thing, far be it for me to say that I, you know, have the answer, because I don't want to come off that way when I share this at all.
Good.
But if assuming just for a bit that Yahweh, the biblical God, was real, mm-hmm. if he created everything, then he has an intrinsic right to do with it as he wills.
Oof.
So if he created everything, does that make sense?
Yeah, I've heard this before.
Yeah. Go ahead. Follow through with your thought, Gregory. Just follow that through and then we'll respond to it.
Yeah.
Because Johnny's getting sick in his mouth right now.
Yeah.
So.
Go on. Yeah.
Okay. No problem. No problem at all. If he created everything as the inventor, so to speak, of everything, then he does have a right to do as he wills. So I know sometimes as humans, we have our own free will. So we project what we perceive love to be, or we can project on God how his love should be, you know, towards us. So I'm just trying to understand the argument, or why often does the argument go to, well, if God is loving, why does he cast beings into hell? I'm trying to understand why that's like, why I hear that be the default position, when in fact he would be the creator of everything.
Okay.
As if I had a computer that I really, really like, you know, sure. And I know we don't like to define ourselves as computer, but if I had a computer that I really, really like, and it started getting to a point where it seemingly was beyond repair, I'd be able to throw it away. I still would love that computer. Like, man, I wish I could fix it. But the method that I utilized to fix it was the Christian would identify as Jesus Christ.
I bet you wouldn't torture it for a bunch of years. Yeah. I bet you wouldn't torture that computer for a bunch of years and then throw it away, would you? Just throwing that out there.
Go into the fact that according to Christianity, the human spirit is eternal.
Sure. Okay, Gregory.
You know, according to Christianity. Okay, go ahead. I want to let you go.
Gregory, let's use the computer analogy for as long as we can. Okay. A computer is an inanimate object that doesn't have feelings, goals, fears, pleasures, anything like that. So let's say that you were to create a computer, because was Dyson from the Terminator. I can't remember his first. You're a supercomputer man, okay? And you were able to design a computer that is so sophisticated that it becomes in some way self-aware. It passes the Turing test. It's not just able to spit out AI answers, but it actually is self-aware, and somehow let's assume that it is self-aware, okay? And now as the creator of that computer, all right, you got two ways of looking at this, okay? One, from the creator's point of view, you have created something that is self-aware, that has goals and fears, it experiences pleasure and pain in some format, right? And because you created it, you can go ahead and torture it. You can put viruses in, you can put logic problems that make it in agony, you can zap it with things. That's disgusting and cruel. You surely would acknowledge that just because you created it doesn't mean you could do whatever the hell you want with it, that you're now somehow beholden to it to treat it with some sort of care. You are, I would argue, you have a fiduciary duty, that a higher standard of care for the thing that you are responsible for bringing into an existence. To some degree like that, we have that with children, we have that with pets, we have that with people that we love and care for. We owe them, I think, a greater duty to act on their behalf in many circumstances. But on the other side, you are let's say you're the computer now. Okay, you are the self-aware computer, and you're getting all these conditions. You are getting forced to do A and forced to do B. You're being rewarded and punished. Why would it not be okay to say, I don't like the conditions that my creator has put on me? Let's say if God existed, or if the computer maker existed. From the computer's perspective, or from the human's perspective, all we have is our own perspective, right? From the perspective of a human, living a human life with human desires and human fears and human whatever, right? The world that is being created for me by this divine creator is unacceptable. It might be perfectly fine for a God that doesn't really feel pleasure or pain because he exists outside of time. But as a limited being, I am being subjected to essentially a gun to my head. Either believe or obey, or you will be tortured forever. I think it's fair for me to say, by the standards of human justice, that I can think that that's bullshit. This is independent of whether or not that actually exists, but I think it's acceptable that an all-loving God, by human standards, does not do this to its creation. Therefore, either that doesn't happen or there is no such thing as the all-loving God.
Yeah, I think I'm going to respond to that. I think Christians who play that card, that God created us and can do whatever he wants with his creation. And if he wants to torture them and throw them into hell or punish them in some way that we don't understand, then we're just clearly, which I can't say clearly, not understanding God's love. We have a warped definition of love. And who are we? The creation. We're the vessel. He's the potter. And who are we to question how he made us and what love looks like? We clearly don't understand love. Christians can't have it both ways. Either that's true because we're told that he created man in his own image. And then he tells us to love him, to love him. If we don't understand what love is, how the hell can we love our creator? So either we don't understand what love is, or we do, and we have this human emotion because we're created in God's image. He has that emotion too. We have these simultaneous emotions that we both understand equally. And when we say, I love you, God, he understands what we mean because he made us in that way and created us to love him that way. So therefore, we're all on the same page. Right. Christians can't have it both ways. Either that's true or the other is true, that God can do whatever the hell he wants with his creation because he's the potter, we're the clay. If he wants to make a bowl and then break it and ground it to powder, how dare us question his omnipotence, his magnificence, all that bullshit. Either it's that or it's the other, but you can't have both. Make up your mind, Christians. Make up your mind.
Yeah. What do you think about that?
I think you can have both. I think someone can be, for lack of a better word, I just kind of saw you guys, so I quickly hopped in. I think you can have someone who's superior and has the final decision making, and he still can choose to do what he wants to do because we have to look at it from a view outside. I understand we're human, so we only have the human experience, so to speak, to define love by. But if he is the superior being who is outside of time, who can, as you said, make a bowl and break it, then you can have both.
Well, what if those things he does are cruel?
What if the things he does are cruel?
What if he can do whatever he wants? So he can ground us to powder if he wants to. If he's having a bad day, like he did with the flood, and he wants to drown everybody, he can do whatever he wants. It's his creation. But those babies drown. Those pregnant women drown. Yep. This pro-life God drowned pregnant women. So how does that make sense with the emotional framework that he supposedly created us with?
I think
incongruent. Go ahead. I'm sorry.
Oh, no, it's okay. I think that's what it comes to of his superiority. That God, and I'm trying to speak in a way where I really want to understand that side of the argument, not in a way of conversion or anything. That's great.
That's what they say. That's William Lane Craig's argument, that whatever God does, if we look at slavery as immoral, if we look at genocide as immoral, it's not immoral if God commands it. That's his argument. That's the end of the conversation. If God says it, that settles it. And we can look at that as with the human emotions that God supposedly gave us, we can look at that. Any rational person can look at that and say, no, that's immoral. It's immoral to own another person. Well, you can't have the morals that God supposedly put in us and then say God can do whatever he wants and it's okay. That's my point. You can't have it both ways.
Gregory, let's say I was your boss and your landlord and your the guy who gives you food, the one that provides you food, and I'm also stronger than you. I don't know how strong you are. Stronger than you, louder than you. I talk more than you.
You work out, so you're probably strong.
Let's say I was able to beat you on every front. I was smarter than you and stronger than you, and you were dependent upon me, and I just beat the living crap out of you every single day, and I made you feel small, and I told you how worthless you compared to me, and I could do it, and you had nothing you could say ever. There's nothing. There's no argument. It was obvious I'm much more powerful than you on rhetorically, intellectually, physically, spiritually, whatever that means. Do you have to be okay with it? Or can you say, fuck this guy? Do you have to just be cool with it?
That's exactly. You can't. You can't say, I don't curse, of course, but you can say tell that person screw off. You can.
Yeah.
That's the choice. You get what I'm
saying?
You
can't do that with God. You can't do that with God because God, according to the Christian.
Well, you can, but he'll punish you for that.
Yeah, can, but you're going to burn in hell.
Right. And right. But that's what I'm saying. That's the important part of, I think it's kind of used as the throwaway point, because humans are naturally, and of course, this is called, according to my belief, humans are naturally given to want to do what they want to do. But it's, you still, you can do what you want to do. In the same way, I think you brought up a child earlier. My child can do what they want to do. But in my household, you know, or when I grew up, I got my butt whooped. That's just right. Part of my parents being able to be my parents and me still being able to make the choice. I can go all the way, you know, I can go all the way or balls to the wall, as they say. I can go all the way to the left. But ultimately, that consequence is there, and that consequence has been clearly presented to me.
Mm-hmm. So, well, let me ask you this, Gregory. You're presenting a hypothetical like what the Christians say. What do you believe? What do you believe about this God figure and how he behaves with his creation, so to speak?
I do believe that God is, I think, what I don't want Christianity, I'll say this too, I don't like that Christianity maps out God as if they've discovered all of him. So I do understand that, and even as a Christian, I hate that the result is that somebody would go to hell, anybody, you know? But I do believe that if he's the creator of everything, there's nothing I could do about it, because he is that creator. He is that inventor of everything. So he does have a right to do with it as he wishes.
If he wants to be the bully, or if he is the bully that Johnny described, and there's nothing we can do about it, are you willing to worship and follow that kind of a figure?
Out of love?
I would say yes, so. I would say,
Well, that's where we differ. I've said this before.
Right.
Yeah.
Right.
If someone were to present enough evidence to me to convince me that the God of the Bible, which is the God I used to believe in, were real, if the God of the Bible, if they could prove the God of the Bible really existed and he's up in the heavens somewhere and he's watching over mankind and he's going to reward us according to our beliefs one day, I still would not worship that God. I don't care if you put me in front of him and put a gun to my head, because that God is evil. That God is awful. That God is horrendous at every turn, because he's a thug. He's a bully. And he does not represent the best in mankind. So I want no part of that God.
Gregory, if let's say you and I were in a room together and I were to sing a song in a discordant tune, okay? Whatever song is, my voice is crap. It's not. It's actually okay. But let's say I were to sing a song in a really bad tone, okay? And then I pointed a gun to your head and I said, tell me that my voice was beautiful just then, or I'll shoot you dead. And you were to say, your voice is beautiful, John. Would that be authentic, or would that be out of fear of death?
It would likely be out of fear, of course.
Sure. So if God is ultimately pointing a cosmic gun at your head and you love him, can you really say that your love is authentic when the fear of eternal punishment is dangling right in front of you? Can you really say that you love him for his qualities and not out of fear of torture forever?
I'm not saying that because I'm stumped. I'm just, I don't know how much time we got, because in that,
we're about out of time. We do have to move on. Yeah.
Yeah. In the Christian worldview, it would be more nuanced than that.
Yeah, it is.
In the Christian worldview.
Yeah.
Well, again, you can't paint Christian with such a broad brush, because I was in one sect or one group, part of Christianity that would have said one thing about that, and other groups said another thing.
You're right. That's true.
They're all over the map on what they believe about those issues. So it's really hard. It's really hard to find a definitive point of agreement on that.
Yeah. Gregory, I appreciate your call.
Question. Oh, go ahead.
No, I appreciate your call. We've got to move on because we are running out of time. Gregory, I like this conversation. I like the
it's a good call.
Like your way of approaching. I want you to call back. Can I get you to commit here in front of the thousands of people that will watch?
I see that hand. Yes.
That you're going to call back? You're going to call back?
I'll watch. I've been watching a lot of you guys' video. I don't commit because I run my own business and everything.
Fair.
So it's
fair enough.
Sometimes it gets busy.
If the opportunity arises and it works out, if the opportunity arises, we'd love to talk to you again on one of these shows, because you're a good guy.
Yep.
You raise good points and it's a good conversation. So keep thinking. Keep thinking and asking the questions, man.
Yep. We really do appreciate your call. All right. We've got Let's see. If you happen to be in the Austin area on May 28th, 2020, we'll be broadcasting live from the Free Thought Library. Yeah, we get together sometimes on Sunday, just like that one caller just. Join us for Talk Heathen, hosted by Forrest Valkai and a special guest. And The Atheist Experience will be hosted also by Forrest Valkai and Jim Barrow, local favorite. Doors open at noon. Hope to see you there. All right, we've got a bunch of people on the call here. Oh, my goodness. I want to talk to Jamal. Jamal is coming out of California, and he asks, or he says, there's historical and scientific evidence for God. You're on AXP with Dave and Johnny. What is the historical and scientific evidence from God? Because I haven't heard it, and I want to hear.
All ears.
All ears.
How are you all doing, first of all?
Hey, great. Jamal.
How are you?
So, okay, so for you two gentlemen, if I provide you information that is, and this information has been deemed accurate and, factual, and it's a lot of information. It's been deemed factual 100% of the time, okay? And there's a few information that has not been, that I have, I presented to you, but it's not, it's just so complex that it's not knowledgeable enough for you to, for people or even scientists to say, you know what, this is actual. It's just not yet, but it will happen. There will be a time presented itself. Would you say, you know what, I'm going to follow this. I think this is going to be, because the first part, the first 80% of it that you gave me was 100% factual, and the remaining 20%, I'm sure it's going to be factual because, you know, the first part was already factual.
This is increasingly hypothetical, Jamal. Could you give us something a little bit more concrete?
Yeah, tell us what the 80% is. Let's start with the 80% that's 100% factual and clearly true. Let's start with that.
What I'm talking about is I am Muslim, and I do.
You're what?
He's Muslim.
The Muslim. Okay. I do believe the Quran is the word of God, and I do believe it's actually the only existing proof of God.
Of course you do, because you're
Muslim. And based on what I was telling you, information contained in it, 80% of it in terms of science, in terms of all that, there's no evidence saying it's wrong. There's no scientific evidence saying it's wrong. I could point out so many different types of archaeological findings, and there's nothing that states that it's wrong. And that's 80% of the book already.
That's not how things work.
Okay.
There's nothing proving it wrong. You have to prove it right.
Yeah, okay. I'll give you an example.
Okay.
Excuse me. I'll give you an example. So, for example, the name Musa, that's the Arabic name for Moses, from the Bible.
All right.
So that name, that's not the same name that's used in Hebrew. You know, obviously the English is not, it wasn't at that time. So that's only an Arabic name, Musa. And this came in 700, 6th century Arabia, when it came, the name was presented and all that. So the name itself, until recently, people thought it was just an Arabic name. But when they found through Egyptian hieroglyphics, when they were able to find out excavation and all that, they found out Musa means newborn. And this was during a time where the Egyptian language was lost during Muhammad's time and only uncovered recently. So how can somebody know any of that? How can somebody know a name that it would just deem that it turns out to be meaning newborn in Egyptian language? How can somebody?
Divine
intervention.
I'm sorry, Jamal.
I'm just saying,
Jamal, that's your Johnny, go-to? That's your go-to.
Yeah, that's Johnny, you realize that.
But I'm saying that's one.
Okay, all right. Well, you went to it. It's not your go-to, but you went to it.
You went to it, yeah.
Okay.
But you realize that.
I'd love to hear your response to that.
I don't. First of all, I know nothing about the Muslim faith. But what you're pointing to is some miraculous name, I guess, as best I can follow. And there's no other explanation other than every word of the Quran is true and every word of your given faith ideology is true. You know that every Christian that would call into this show would say the same thing about their faith. How do you answer that?
Dave, before we do that, Dave, I do want to kind of address this point, because I think Jamal thinks he's got he's thrown a shuriken at us, and it's up to us to either get stuck with the shuriken or to slash it.
Okay,
with
go ahead and deal with that then.
Yeah. So a name existed in the Quran that we didn't have evidence for. a name.
It's never been used before.
Okay. You know that language exists and people talk and names. We have an understanding that there's a Proto-Indo-European, and we know from linguistic studies that words tend to morph, transmogrify and change over geology or geography through cultural groups. And you got Johnny, you got Sean, you got Jan, you got Johan, you got Juan, and all these sort of changes over time, okay, that cultural groups change and they modify name. And so even though it might be not written down, it could exist in the oral tradition of naming people names. And the fact that they were able to find a name in hieroglyphics, and the fact that it might exist somewhere in the Quran and exist in other texts from the time is not evidence that the Quran is true. It just is evidence that the people that wrote the Quran down existed in this tableau of languages, living languages that were passing back and forth across the Levant. And that's it. I'm sorry. That's not miraculous in any way.
That's not going to move the needle much here, Jamal.
Yeah.
Sorry.
Yeah.
Sir, let me just clarify, okay? The Egyptian language was lost for thousands of years, okay? Thousands of years.
Cool.
So this is way before Muhammad's time, way before. It's been already lost for so much before, and it was lost even after, you know, 1,200, 1,300 years after Muhammad died, right? So, and it means newborn, and it's the name that was given to Musa. Moses. It was given to him by his, his adopted parents. Name. So how could he have known that name? And it's just a coincidence. Like, is this just a coincidence that he just mentioned that name, and all of a sudden,
what if it's a coincidence, Jamal?
Of Moses' time. Think about it. That was the new. That's the name meaning newborn in Egyptian time. Well, actually, that's not really
Jamal. Do you recognize how terrible this argument is, or do you actually think this is good?
He doesn't. That's the problem. It's just so.
You could have, but you didn't. You came out with Moses newborn. So what? The people that spoke ancient Egyptian, okay, they did not get wiped off of the face of the earth. They continued. They continued to live in Egypt, and they spread throughout the area. Their language changed. Ancient Egypt became, I don't know, Middle Egypt. Ancient Egyptian became Middle Egyptian, became modern Egyptian. And the people who lived there continued through time. Names, like, we have evidence that linguistic traditions continue over the course of thousands of years. You could look up Proto-Indo-European, just for example. You got words like honey and milk and mama and papa and things like that continue. The words mean the same thing and they change a little bit over time. The fact that the Quran uses a name that existed somewhere on a clay wall or chiseled into limestone, so what? No offense, but like, I know that's very persuasive, and probably your imam, if you have one, use this as evidence for the Quran's accuracy, but it's a trash argument, dude.
It's not compelling at all to anyone not in that bubble, Jamal. That's what you need to understand.
You sound like a smart guy, and I think you can do better than that. So, Jamal, why don't you, honest?
It's not just that. I have actually, I want to just think about a couple things, okay?
Well, Jamal,
we don't have time. I'm
Jamal,
sorry.
It's nice to want things, and I'll tell you what I want. I want you to call back again so we can continue this. Call earlier.
With a better argument.
Let's skip over Moses. And we really do have to go because we have exhausted the oxygen allotted to us, and we must now.
Which is science. Oxygen is science.
Oxygen is science. Oh, but it's, you know, it's all make believe. Look, have you said to yourself, I love the ECA content, but I hate looking at those faces. I just
that's call me. My head hurt. I'm sorry. Yeah.
I want to listen to AXP all the time, all day, every day. Well, we can do that for you. Your wish is granted, as if from a genie. Check out our brand new 24/7 AXP TV live stream. Tune in at any time of the day, and you'll get a constant stream of AXP from the very beginning to the very end. Watch or listen to your favorite hosts and discover some hosts you never heard of. Visit tiny.cc/AXPTV to join the fun. Again, our question of the week, our share your experience. experience is blank is evidence for God's sense of humor. Enter your answer in the comments section below, not in the live chat, because live chat goes away. And then tune in next week to see the top answers. Dave Warnock.
Yes,
sir. Good, Sir Warnock.
Yes.
We did a show together.
Here. That was fun, man.
Yeah.
That last call made my head hurt. And I'm still not sure what science and miracles are together. I'm still confused about that one. But anyway, it was cool.
The name of Moses is a miracle that proves the existence
of science.
Of Anatar, Lord of Gifts. That's my takeaway.
That's the wrap up. Yep.
Yeah. Everyone who tuned in today, thank you so much. Visit our website at atheist-community.org for the latest on what's happening. Contact us at tv@atheist-community.org. Thank you so much for tuning in.
Stay skeptical, everyone.
Oh, yeah. Come back next week. We'll see you then. Bye.
What will it take for you to start opening your eyes, to stop questioning the bullshit everyone around you buys? You think it's any of your business what goes on between my thighs? I wonder when we'll be rid of your eyes.
Watch Talk Heathen Live Sundays at 1 p.m. Central. Visit tiny.cc/YTTH and call into the show at 512-991-9242 or connect to the show online at tiny.cc/callTH.